This is the Feet in Two Worlds podcast. I'm Jocelyn Gonzalez. There was a time not long ago when the words made in China had a very different connotation than they do today. And the meaning of those words attached to a piece of clothing or a kitchen gadget often varied depending on where the buyer was from. For example, a Chinese immigrant versus someone born in the U.S. For decades, if you wanted to find products made in China in New York City, Pearl River Mart was the place to go. Pearl River Mart wasn't just a department store, it was a cultural landmark. Then in 2016, after 40 years in business, the store closed. But its faithful customers and its founders weren't ready to let go. What happens when a classic mom-and-pop shop confronts a generational transition? Michelle Chen, the daughter of Pearl River's original proprietors, Mingyi Chen and Qingye Chen, has the story of how the store began, from its origins at the cusp of the Cold War and the free trade era, to how, in the new millennium, Pearl River Mart has been revived for the next generation of consumers.
It's a busy night at my parents' store on Broadway in Soho, New York. I'm following my mom around the sprawling three-story space near closing time.
What's the big selling item, Mom, on the post last day?
Whatever cheap, 50% off.
Do you think most people know it's the final day, they get it?
Most people know, but there are occasionally there are people who say, they will ask, why are you closing? Why is it so empty?
That's right. We're not just closing for the day. It's spring of 2016. Our lease is ending, and Pearl River Mart is leaving the space for good. And we're not sure if we'll be able to move to a new space. We're not sure if we'll just shut down the business forever. I step through piles of cardboard boxes, dismantled display shelves, heaps of package stuffing, and of course, all of our products. Colorful stacks of kitsch lined up for final clearance. Embroidered slippers, Buddha trinkets, satin pajamas, Ming vases, tea balls, even antique Mao Zedong posters. Some shoppers mill about.
But Pearl River Mart in particular, I feel like, has always been a place that you can go and find treasures and, like, you know, just discover things that you didn't know that you wanted to buy. And that, you know, I feel like Pearl River Mart is part of what drew people to this location in the first place. And this place has been a huge part of so many people's lives. And thank you to your family for making that happen.
Really, it's glad to be of service.
It's
our pleasure. What's your name?
Sarah.
Pearl River Mart, New York's first and only Chinese department store, is going the way of so many other classic city mom and pops, dive bars, jazz clubs, and movie theaters. We're all turning into the ghosts of a city that's becoming unrecognizable to me, a lifelong New Yorker. One thing that hasn't changed about Pearl River over the last 40 years, it's where people from all over come together and just shop. Here, young and old New Yorkers rub shoulders, people whose tastes in fashion range from business suits to punk leather jackets, where hipsters and union carpenters browse the racks together. This, to me, embodies the cultural mosaic of New York. It's like the subway at rush hour, but no one's in a hurry to leave. Except many of our customers have already moved on over the years. You can say we've all migrated. This store, the store I grew up in, always meant movement. It brought China closer to Chinatown. It brought Chinatown to the rest of America. The store I grew up in is really a store where Chinese America grew up. That's my dad, toasting the employees at a send-off dinner in a local restaurant. My mom reflects back on what dad's accomplished.
He's the one who dares to find a way
his own way. He always more focused on the longer vision of it.
It's amazing to think of where that vision has taken him from when he first arrived in Chinatown in the 1970s.
At the beginning, I know I come to Chinatown as like a foreign alien. Yeah.
Back then, it was a different world. China was still behind the Iron Curtain, and soy sauce and chopsticks were exotic to Americans. There were no real diplomatic or commercial relations with China, but there was a lot of curiosity.
In general, people have a pretty vague about China. They know, oh, China is a big country, you know, long history, you know, kind of. That time, you know, it's politically, you know, illegal to trade with China. The maximum Chinese goods you can bring into U.S. is $400.
Chinatown was going through its own version of the political unrest of the time. Corky Lee, a local photojournalist, explains.
It was like about 6 years after the relaxation of the immigration laws from 1965 to 1975, Chinese immigrant population became politicized. So that's why you had protests in 1974 for Confucius Plaza. You had a police brutality protest in 1975 down at City Hall. 1982, the same year as Vincent Chin, there was a garment labor rally in Chinatown, which had 15,000.
My dad was in the thick of it, and he soon gained a reputation in Chinatown. The brash young chemist from Taiwan turned Maoist revolutionary. So the store was born under the scrutiny of both the government and a wary Chinatown community. But he was fearless. He wanted to show a different, less forbidding face of China. With funds pooled from a bunch of his grad school and activist friends, Dad opened Pearl River Mart in 1971. It would roughly mirror the stores in China that sold authorized imported goods to diplomats and foreigners. Pearl River would be a U.S. counterpart, one of a few American stores that openly traded with mainland Chinese businesses. Unlike the Friendship stores in China, this one would be open to all.
So when we start first day, September 1st, I remember, almost same day, all the shelves were empty. People are so excited about, you know, from all over. We didn't put any advertisement, but it seems the whole city know right away, you know.
The story founded was like nothing the city had ever seen, with a full array of goods Chinese immigrants missed from back home.
The cotton towel for washing face and T-shirt they used for years. Something like a day's canned day's fish. Even they don't like mainland China's system, or they love the goods they familiar for years, when they were in China many years ago.
And of course, Maoist propaganda galore. These products were familiar to many local Chinese, but not to most Laofan or foreign barbarians. The Friendship Store's windows were about as close as they could get to the dream of Red China. Then, in 1972, Nixon made his groundbreaking diplomatic visit to China.
And let the great Chinese people and the great American people be worthy of the hopes and ideals of the world for peace and justice and progress for all.
The normalization of U.S.-China relations began, and trade restrictions loosened. With my dad importing goods from the Maoist Empire's previously isolated factories and workshops, his little emporium helped grease the skids for his homeland's great awakening. He even made the evening news.
Mainland Chinese goods have been moving into the U.S. market in increasing amounts. The groundwork has been laid. Already, the first all-mainland Chinese product store in the U.S. has opened in New York's Chinatown. The owner is Ming Chen, born on the mainland, a former resident of Taiwan, holder of a doctorate from the University of Chicago. We asked Mr. Chen what the response has been.
In general, our custom is increasing. Our business is getting better. Response from customer also getting warmer.
With Nixon, Kissinger, and ping pong teams making the Chinese connection at the same time, Dad had stumbled straight into history.
Very interesting. Such a small store, so small scale in any center, you know. But the publicity just overwhelming. That means something right, you know. The two countries got to to start communicate again, you know, connect again. Yeah.
But not all the attention was good. The bitter legacy of the Red Scare was still looming over Chinatown. The feds even suspected my dad was a spy running a communist storefront.
So a lot of older immigrants, Chinese immigrants, they are so scared about, because a lot of innocent people are being persecuted, and some even die in the jail, you know. So when I, first of all, the FBI called me, you know, to interview some older Chinese friends, you know. They said, oh, don't talk to them, very dangerous. You'll be dead dog.
The FBI would show up regularly at the store.
Two of them, every time, different people probably come here and want to talk to him. They feel there's something behind this. You know, there's a hand from China. So they try to find out, you know. But on the other hand, they probably try to intimidate you. You know, say, okay, we are watching you, but we have nothing to hide.
But my dad had a trick. Instead of submitting to interrogations at FBI headquarters, he'd treat the agents to a Chinese restaurant meal. The authorities tried to juice my dad for state secrets, but got a free lunch instead, while my dad got away with taking the fifth. No, Pearl River wasn't a communist front, but the glorious image of China it projected was my dad's socialist utopia. Out there, a revolutionary republic was flourishing. Building a new world in Chinatown was great fun for my dad. And to our customers, immigrants and American lefties, this was the China of their dreams, too. Pearl River was, shall we say, democratically arranged. Okay, so the place is a mess. People's Liberation Army jackets in this corner, funeral decorations over in that corner, next to Chinese pajamas crowded alongside spicy pickle jars, contraband from an arch enemy of the US. But now, their real enemies were hungry New York rats. The store also had an uneasy relationship with the police. In the 1980s, cops on the lookout for illegal stuff like pocket knives and fake designer bags treated local shops with suspicion. But my dad always preferred policing the store himself anyway.
Also, I have to do security, you know, and people say, oh, you're such an old guy, you know, how can I think you'll be surprising. I can still catch burglar. The shoplift is surprising too.
At some point, our customers started to flip from mostly Chinese immigrants to mainly white folks. My parents realized that they were our real growth market. For Chinatown locals, we were just another grocery store. But white shoppers saw us as a go-to portal for all things Chinese. Our reputation as an Asian kitsch bazaar exploded nationwide. The Chinese Festival for the Year of the Rooster made for an excellent trend piece in the New York Times style pages.
It's a full page talking about how, what is Chinese New Year? What is the Year of Rooster?
New customers felt like they'd stumbled on an undiscovered shopper's paradise. Urban fashionistas saw it as their personal cave of wonders.
And they think Pearl River is it's a treasure island, you know? It's a secret because the entrance is so small, like 5 feet. You missed it after you pass it next to McDonald's, but only a few people knows. You have to go upstairs, you know, turn around, and you'll see a big department store there, which has so many good things, like, you know, you couldn't find it any place else.
And while the business gained a new following, we lost some old customers, the ones who came to Pearl River for their basic supplies.
But now, of course, they change. Everybody buys at BJ, you know. And they buy the Costco, they're all familiar with that. So it's quite a change. And in the meantime, we have to change also.
So in the late 1980s, my parents took a gamble on moving out of Chinatown to Soho, a fashionable, artsy neighborhood. The first move was to the borderline of Chinatown and Soho. There, we chased an expanding market of American shoppers obsessed with Chinese stuff. We carried the old favorites, like tea and sesame candies, but our shelves now featured bonsai trees and exotic incense for the New Age Buddhists. Teenage girls loved our glittery brocade Cheongsam gowns. In middle school, I even promoted myself to bicultural marketing chief and wrote Pearl River's first English language mail order catalog. From there, it was up and up and even uptown. We moved two more times. Our final location was a big department store. No more Chinatown. We'd cross the Rubicon to Soho, right across from Bloomingdale's. The move brought us even more publicity. Sarah Jessica Parker raving about us on Oprah. And Queer Eye, the original one, that is.
Another thing that I thought was really great, this is also from Pearl River, are the umbrellas.
Oh, wow.
So this is going to sort of be this beautiful glow.
We didn't abandon our old values. Despite the fancy new digs, we'd still only charge a dollar or two for our classic beaded slippers. Even so, our employees had to adjust to the wider, more educated clientele. Some struggled with basic English. We started to hire more young people who could navigate between the two worlds. Wilkie started with us in the 1980s, when he was still in high school. He witnessed the tensions when we shifted our focus to the new non-Chinese customers.
I really don't understand. I mean, yeah, if they want that type of problem, they can still walk around Ma Street or to look for that.
When some of our longtime customers grumbled about missing the old, rougher Pearl River, Wilkie bristled. To the young Chinese American, Pearl River mirrored the growth of the whole community, especially his generation.
To us, I think we don't want to stay in that type of a setting. Mm-hmm.
The new American customers appreciated us in our new setting. Folks passing by just stopped in. Tourists, young people, they like the new store just fine.
The American people they appreciate that fixture that they see, mm-hmm. the waterfall, the stairs, tea balcony. Customer will have a sense of they walk into a wonder store.
But our leaving Chinatown didn't just mean the business had grown. It signaled a bleaker trend. During the years leading up to our move to the edge of Chinatown and then ultimately into Soho, rents downtown were soaring, pricing out much of the local working class. The garment factories and little stores that had supported Chinatown were collapsing, one by one.
I came to Chinatown since 80, right? And at the very beginning, probably a lot of laundry, it's the main thing in Chinatown, and then restaurant, and then the garment workers. It's so concentrated. After 10 years or so, it's all gone. Not one even today. First, they moved a little bit to Brooklyn, and then to Queens, but then it's all gone. And Chinatown, it suffered without those people's support.
Pearl River's moves reflected that change. We unmoored ourselves from a sinking ship and headed for more promising shores. But leaving Chinatown, where Pearl River was born, cost us, too. By the mid-2000s, we had swelled to a huge three-level business operation. When we first opened, we were a breakthrough in so-called ethnic retail. Our crossover act showed a mom-and-pop shop could ride globalization to the top of the market. Then Soho got more expensive, ironically in part because of businesses like ours. Many ignored the risk that the big retail bubble might go pop one day.
For us, we don't have a strong financial background, at the beginning, and it's kind of under-financed business. The only thing we have is we like to take risk.
We rode the risk for as long as we could. Eventually, it hit us that New York was outgrowing small businesses like ours, too. With the 2007 recession, retail markets crashed. But the city's rents remained absurdly high. Soon, the revenue from our foot traffic just couldn't keep up with our rent.
It's a challenge, and especially we have such a big space. There's nothing much you can do. You cannot blame the landlord. That's capitalist. This is a free market, So it's a big question,
But it wasn't just that consumers weren't spending enough money. Now, we weren't the only place to buy Chinese goods. We had competition.
Because I think, of course, internet shopping is one of the reasons. I'll give you an example. if you hit lanterns online, you can buy lanterns at any place, Amazon, even Alibaba, everywhere. If you hit Buddha online, you have thousands of pages of Buddha available for you. So people, you know, the new generation, they like to do that quick and so, yeah.
And China had opened up way beyond what Dad imagined when he first started his friendship store. Now cheap Chinese goods were everywhere. Across America, it was hard to buy stuff not made in China. We weighed selling the company or relocating again. It seemed like we were out of options. What's more, time wasn't waiting for my parents. They were nearing retirement age. Maybe it was time to call it a day.
And also, of course, 44 years, you know, you just cannot work forever, right, including ourselves. So the only thing I regret is many employees work for us for such a long time, and they are reaching a certain age. It's hard for them to, over 50, to start something new.
Wilkie honestly couldn't imagine a day when he didn't get up to go to work at Pearl River. He hoped that Pearl River could adapt and renew itself. People needed us. He was sure of it. But
whether they would find us again in somewhere else, I really doubt.
So here we are with the Soho store closing. And our new customers came in droves during our final sale days to say they'd miss us, that we just had to stay open somehow.
I grew up in Manhattan, and I've actually been coming here since I was really little, since I was like in grade school.
He spoke as if he missed the old locations, but actually he had only been to this one. And I realized that our newest location was a decade old. For a lot of millennials, this new, hyper-modern Pearl River was the only one they'd ever known. And they were still waxing nostalgic over it.
I mean, the sadness is the physical change in the store, but it's kind of like this vanishing face of New York City.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, if Pearl River went down now, we did have a good run all those years.
So the customers' enthusiasm and their passionate about this store just make us feel it's proof, like I'm convinced I've accomplished something. So even we cannot continue, close this chapter without a chapter two, it's fine. It's totally fine because not every story has a chapter two. So no regret, I'm proud of what I'm doing. And I think, you know, if we couldn't continue, we'll live in people's memory, and it might be probably is the best. Because if you continue with something which is totally changed, your face changed, it might not be a good thing.
But little did I know, Pearl River still had some surprises in store. Just as my parents were losing hope of finding someone to take over the business, my sister-in-law, Joanne, had an epiphany.
You know, after one dinner, my husband and I, talking about what, you know, their options and what they could do, I think we turned to each other and thought, what about us?
Now let's backtrack a bit. By this point, Mom and Dad had come to my brother and me for some advice, but it hadn't really occurred to them that they should pass it on to one of us. I'm a writer. My brother's an engineer. Neither of us really had that entrepreneurial gene. And so my sister-in-law, with no business experience of her own, decided to take the plunge. Until then, she had never contemplated a career change from her work in public relations. But then she thought, why not? It was a radical idea. And I thought, great, a miracle. But what did it mean? Turns out, it wasn't just Pearl River due for a reincarnation. Chinatown at that point wasn't the same neighborhood that my dad first launched the store in. But there were good changes, too. The younger generation, like me, was coming back. We were all thinking about Chinatown's future. My family attended a community forum on how the neighborhood could renew itself while preserving its traditional character. My mom joined the discussion.
So Chinatown is really, in a sense, it's kind of hollowed, you know, just where is it? And all you see people here, all the young people are gone, just like little Italy. I think it's interesting. It's really a big topic, you know. Well, how we want the Chinatown to be? I mean, what should we do about Chinatown?
Other, mostly younger Asian Americans talked about how the generation that grew up in the community could help it evolve.
But I think
that for 21st century Asian Americans, it's not just the confrontation of catering to the outside white or like tourist world that we've been used to doing to survive, but the Asian like minority is, you know, so numerous now that you can have this Asian culture anywhere. So what is it about Chinatown?
Could Pearl River be part of this renaissance? We might not be in the heart of the neighborhood anymore, but we felt like we were on the cusp of some kind of resurgence. Things were happening.
After the announcement was already made, I saw the reaction, and the reaction was quite extraordinary. And I think for somebody who knows that landscape, to see the amount of love and attention that they received, clearly there was still demand.
For the past 2 years, I've been watching Joanne's plans evolve from a distance.
We knew that there were two big things that we needed to change. One was that the company was not yet in the digital era. So we had a website. So that's something where I felt like I could definitely improve on. You know, a three-floor department store is not sustainable in New York City. So I think we knew that we had to slim it down a little bit and basically redo the entire digital operation. We need to maintain the institutions that have a rich history. So, you know, a 50-year-old organization, we don't want to let it die because we want to continue it because there's strength in that history. You know, you can't battle gentrification. Of course, we have to evolve. But I think we can evolve in a way that feels comfortable.
But can we pull this off? All I know is my sister-in-law was touched by how the community had responded to the closure of Pearl River's storefront, and she didn't want it all to just end. So she's taking on the challenge with the same kind of ambitious vision that my dad had when he opened the first store in Chinatown. She's worked as a lawyer and in public relations at Barnard College. No retail experience, but hey, that's obviously not required for this job. And she's gifted with that essential Pearl River fuel, an appetite for risk.
At that point, I thought, you know, let me try this. Let me try this because it means a lot to me and it means a lot to my family and to New York in general.
A beloved Manhattan department store is making a comeback after soaring rents forced it to close. Pearl River Mart will open up a temporary pop-up shop at 395 Broadway on Tribeca next month. It is preparing for a grand reopening in May. The new store is about 5 blocks away.
So I want to thank everyone for coming out tonight. It has been a roller coaster of a year for all of us, especially for our family.
Joanne's welcoming our guests. There are media figures, some elected officials, and other so-called influencers. It's November 2016, and we're celebrating a grand reopening at a new downtown location in Tribeca.
We talked about it a lot as a family, and I think we thought that it was kind of our time to step up because we both grew up in New York, and the city means a lot to us. Pearl River means a lot to the city, and this place, this legacy, and this company has very special meaning for the Asian American community. So for that, we really we felt like it was our time to step up. So it took a village to get this pop-up store.
The people who come to our store, the customers, perhaps they see like treasures and exotic goods. But for me, I see myself, I see my history.
Tiffany Liu is one of our newest employees.
From the community that Pearl River Mart creates, I've been really able to access a lot of oral history about Chinese culture, which is so special as a Chinese American that grew up mostly around non-Chinese people.
She's a Chinese American young artist from Atlanta who finds Pearl River inspiring for her work, in part because another feature of our new location is a small space to showcase the work of contemporary Asian American artists. So she's taken a shine to her new job at our second location in Chelsea, the furthest we've been outside of Chinatown.
3, 2, 1.
And at our new digs in Chelsea Market, we recently rang in the new year with a traditional lion dance ceremony. At a dinner gathering in Chinatown, we got together all the staff and family to celebrate our first year together as a reconstructed Pearl River. 3 generations together, half a century of collective history in New York City and China. In the bustling, fluorescent-lit Royal Seafood Palace, Joanne made her first speech as manager.
She was carrying on my parents' tradition of toasting the employees for another year's good work. She managed to say some words of encouragement in two languages, thanks to a little help from Google Translate.
Joanne's gonna make a speech in Chinese!
I caught up with her at the end of the night to ask how she felt about officially taking the reins.
I don't feel like it's an inheritance because your parents are still working every day, which is fantastic. So they're very much in it, you know? Yeah. So I feel like an inheritance is like, oh, here you go, and I'm going to Boca Raton.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And this is more like we're building it together, but there's so much more potential for the store.
To me, Pearl River is about more than the sum of its achievements. It's about the potential for renewal in the migration experience. For the Chinese-American community, we hope the last chapter in Pearl River's story will be a reprise of the first. Once upon a time, someone had an idea for a store. And the world changed. And the store changed. And the store, in its own small way, changed the world.
Michelle Chen produced that story for Feet in Two Worlds. Some of the audio in this story comes from a documentary by Betty Yu and Mansi Kong, and interviews conducted by Telly Wong of the IWK Group. News clips from NBC News, New York One, Bravo, and Cinovision. Location recording by Michelle Chen and Will Coley. Thanks for listening to this Feet in Two Worlds podcast. Our executive producer is John Rudolph, our editor is Rosalind Tordesillas, and Rachel Bongiorno is our managing editor. I'm Jocelyn Gonzalez, producer of this series. Feet in Two Worlds is supported by the David and Catherine Moore Family Foundation, the Ralph E. Ogden Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the J. M. Kaplan Fund, an anonymous donor, and readers like you. Support our work. You can make a contribution on our website at fi2w.org. Feet in Two Worlds is a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School.